Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one to ask a question. I would like to inform all participants that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Elwin Grant. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Jennifer. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Elwin Grant, and I am the Acting Branch Chief for CDC's News Media Branch. I wish to thank you all for joining us for today's telebriefing on CDC's National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey, also known as NISFIT. Here today to discuss the NISFIT 2010 data is Dr. Linda DeGutis, and that's spelled D-E-G-U-T-I-S. Dr. DeGutis is the director of CDC's National Center for Injury Prevention and Control. Following her remarks, Dr. DeGutis will be joined by Dr. Howard Spivak, and that's spelled S-P-I-V-A-K, and he is the director of CDC's Division of Violence Prevention. Both will be taking questions after the remarks. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Dr. DeGutis.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and I'd like to thank you all very much for joining us. I'm here to discuss the National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey, which is also known as NISFIS, which is one of CDC's newest public health surveillance systems. This is the first survey of its kind to provide both national and state-level violence prevalence estimates for all states, and the numbers from the first year of data collection are astounding. More than 1 million women reported being raped in the 12 months prior to taking the survey. Many more women and men reported being victims of other forms of sexual violence. And more than 6 million women and men were a victim of stalking. These were victims who reported being very fearful and believed that they or someone close to them would be harmed or killed as a result. More than 12 million women and men reported rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner over the course of a year. That equals 24 people per minute being a victim of rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner in this country. Most of these victims first experienced these types of violence before they were 25 years old, often during their teenage years. The effect can be immediate. 81% of women and 35% of men who experienced rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner reported at least one impact of the violence, such as fear, concern for safety, post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, injury, missing at least one day of work or school, and a need for medical care or other victim services. Or the effect can last a lifetime. People who experience sexual violence, stalking, or intimate partner violence often deal with the effects for their entire lives. For example, the NISFIS data tell us it's much more likely that women who experience violence will have long-term health problems. These include irritable bowel syndrome, diabetes, frequent headaches, chronic pain, and difficulty sleeping. The survey also found nearly twice as many women who were victims of violence reported having asthma. Men who were victims also described their mental and physical health as poor, and they were also more likely to experience frequent headaches, chronic pain, and difficulty sleeping. Even if you're not a victim of violence, you're not immune. I want to emphasize that we all share this burden. Previous CDC research suggests the social, economic, and health-related costs are substantial. The direct medical and mental health costs and lost productivity costs alone total more than $8 billion a year, and that's about $25 per person for every man, woman, and child in this country. All of this underscores that sexual violence, stalking, and intimate partner violence are widespread and important public health problems in this country. We know this even without knowing the true magnitude of this problem. Many victims do not report this type of violence to police, friends, family, or health providers. That's why a system like NISFIS is hugely important, because population-based surveys are one of the most important sources for uncovering these forms of violence. Using NISFIS will help us stop the violence before it happens. We know prevention needs to begin early by promoting healthy, respectful relationships in families. We can do this by fostering healthy parent-child relationships, by developing positive family dynamics and emotionally supportive environments. This provides a strong foundation for children so they learn the skills that can carry forward in their own relationships and grow up to be healthy adults. It is also crucial that we continue to address the beliefs, attitudes, and messages condoning these forms of violence. If we all work together, we can address and prevent these forms of violence from happening in the first place. I would like now to open the phones for questions for myself and my colleagues, and I thank you for listening.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name clearly. To withdraw your request, you may press star 2. Just one moment for the first question. And our first question comes from Mike Stobie of the Associated Press. Sir, you may begin.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. Doctor, I just wanted to clarify, make sure I got it. Well, two questions. First, I just want to make sure I got it right. When you said more than 1 million reported being raped in the previous year, that's reported being raped or being the victim of attempted rape and other things that were part of that definition. Is that correct? And then I had a second question.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And the second question, regarding the state differences, it looked like certain states, Alaska, Nevada, Oregon, were high. I was wondering, in certain categories, including the rape category against women, I was wondering if you all had any thoughts about why those states were higher.
We can't, from the data that we have so far, we really can't make any assessments of why specific states might have higher rates. One of the things to keep in mind is that the state data are based on lifetime prevalence, so we really don't know what the reasons for that are right now.
Okay, thanks.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record your name clearly. Just one moment for our next question. And our next question comes from Molly Peterson of Bloomberg News. You may begin.
Yes, hi. Can you tell me, is this data posted yet anywhere on the CDC's website? I'm actually not finding it anywhere on the site.
It should be posted or will be posted immediately after this teleconference is over. And you should have information on the website.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Our next question comes from Fran Lowry of Medscape. You may begin.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wondered if you had any more specific suggestions for prevention methods. You mentioned promoting healthy, family dynamics and so forth. Do you have any more specific ideas on how this could be accomplished?
Yes, hi. There are a number of suggestions and actually specific programs that either have evidence to support some effectiveness or are showing promising results. Some of them, for example, that we are actually funding through the CDC is a program called Dating Matters, where we're in 4 cities piloting curriculum for middle schools that has promising data to suggest that it improves the quality and safety in dating relationships. There's also a number of curricula that actually focus on bystanders around sexual violence. Two examples are a program called Green Dot, and a second one is called Second Step. These deliver different approaches, but they also are beginning to show promising results in terms of changes in attitude as well as reported behavior. So those are two examples of specific programs. There's also growing capacity in both state and local health departments that can be helpful for this. We are funding rape prevention education programs in all 50 states as well as Puerto Rico and the territories. And these programs can be found in the directories of the various state and local health departments. We're funding programs in 14 states called the Delta Program, which is working around developing prevention programs with respect to intimate partner violence. So there's a growing set of resources at the state and local level, as well as a growing base of programmatic interventions, many of which are education-based, so they're school-based and or are situated in programs that serve in particular youth.
Can I ask you to identify yourself, please?
Oh, my name is Howard Spivak.
Okay, I thought so. I just wanted to make sure.
Sorry.
And can I just follow up on the question about the website? The report is now posted. The URL is www.cdc.gov/violenceprevention/NISCS.
Our next question comes from Ronnie Rabin from the New York Times. You may begin.
Hi. I just want to follow up on the numbers and the estimates, because the definition of rape includes a non-completed rape, an attack. And I'm just trying, this is somewhat technical, but the estimate is one of five women during their lifetime. So was this? How do you get the lifetime figure? I mean, it's five women who were surveyed, right? It's a calculation?
Correct. So the question, in the questions that the respondents were asked, they were asked about lifetime occurrence as well as what happened during the 12 months before the survey. So there were, you know, sort of two parts to that question. And so the lifetime piece, you know, did go back. Basically, they were asked to reflect back on their lifetime. The data methodologically are then used to project the information that we get from the sample, which is a selected, you know, a randomly selected sample, to project it to the population as a whole.
So when we're talking about a lifetime, then do you mean that a woman who has reached the end of her life?
No, just at the time, since whatever age she is at the time. So someone's 25 at the time of the survey. In the 25 years that in her lifetime, has she been raped or sexually assaulted or experienced any of these kinds of violence? So it's during that time period, up until the time of the survey, has she or anyone who's responded, have they experienced any of those forms of violence? Does that make sense?
No. Clearly, a woman who's
20,
25 has been, her chance of being raped is greater than at 18. So, I mean, is it one in five across the age groups?
It's one in five overall for everybody who was surveyed. It's not broken down by age group.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Jennifer, could we have the next question, please?
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Janice Lloyd of USA Today. You may begin.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Can you talk a little bit about the part of the study that describes how early this is starting in life and what families, maybe what new conversations families need to be having?
Sure. First of all, I think the data show that this often occurs very early in someone's life, and that for many of the people who are victims, you know, this starts, or their first occurrence of any violence is before the age of 25, and most rape victims were first raped before 25. Female victims of completed rape, more than three-quarters, it's almost 80% actually, were first raped before their 25th birthday, and 42% experienced their first completed rape before the age of 18. About 35% of women who were raped as minors, that's under the age of 18, were also raped as adults. So we do know that that's a, you know, it's very common for it to start in the early years. For men, we know that it's 28%. 28% of men who experienced this violence experienced it at an early age as well. So the issue is it occurs early in lifetime. It often starts early in the lifetime. And so for families, the ways of dealing with this, first of all, as Dr. Spivak mentioned, it's the need to really focus on healthy and nurturing relationships, to be able to develop relationships that are safe and stable, that nurture a child, being aware of who is interacting, you know, with your children. I think, do you have other things you want to add to that on the prevention side for families?
No, I think what you said is it covers it well. I think a lot of this is really rooted in the understanding and skills that children develop pretty early in their lives in terms of how they relate to other people, how they respect other people, what are acceptable, what's an acceptable range of behaviors and what isn't. Children are greatly influenced by the messages they get externally, both in the media and in their immediate lives. So creating a healthy value system around children is extremely important.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Emily Walker of MedPage Today. Ma'am, you may begin.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I know this is the first type of this study from the CDC, but how do these findings compare to previous studies that have looked at, you know, incidents of rape in someone's lifetime, for instance?
This is the first study in quite a number of years, well over a decade, that has actually looked at this. And because this is the first one in this period of time, there's really not an ability to look at this and compare it to other studies because we don't have other population-based studies that are recent or that cover all of these aspects of violence.
Well, can I ask you, the 1 in 5 figure seemed high, you know, to me anyway. Were you surprised by how high that was? Is CDC surprised by that?
Yes, I think we were surprised that it was that high.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Just one moment for our next question. Our next question comes from Maggie Fox of National Journal. You may begin.
Hi, thanks. I wanted to ask if we were going to get a written summary of some of the statistics that are in this report. I lost the call and missed the very beginning. But I was wondering what also you can do with these numbers, where they're going, and if there's any policy implications.
Okay, first of all, the numbers are, the report itself is on the CDC website, and so you can access summary information as well as the full report on the website. So I think that's important. I think on the policy implications side, I'll start by saying, first of all, the fact that there is such a high rate of violence that occurs, particularly in women, and the significant impact on their health and long-term well-being, it really argues for several things. Certainly prevention and a real focus on preventing this violence so that women don't suffer these long-term consequences, and then the need for services for people who have already been victims of sexual violence, intimate partner violence, and stalking.
Yeah, I would add that the finding of the age of first experience has huge policy implications, because it really does mean that we need to focus our prevention efforts on children, not just adults or even teenagers, because there's already a significant number of individuals who are affected by the time they reach that age. So thinking about how kids learn the skills to relate in healthy ways is very important, and again, there's huge policy implications for that, for any number of systems, healthcare, education, and otherwise.
Can I follow up on that?
Sure.
So who is ultimately responsible here? And this is a difficult one because it implies a need for sex education at an early age, and also implies that there are adults who will listen to these kids, which anecdotally, my understanding is it's not always the case that the children are even believed.
Okay. I'm not sure that this that we would say absolutely this is what the specific recommendations right now are for the policy implications. I think what's going to have to happen is with these data, there's a lot of information here that we're going to have to digest a little bit more, start to have some of the people who are engaged in doing some of the work with children and in other places figure out what it really means and what it means for programs that exist or programs that need to be developed. So I think right now it may be a little bit premature to say what the specific policies might be that this would really have an impact on.
Jennifer, we have time for one more question.
I show no other questions at this time.
Since there are no further questions, I wish to thank you all for participating in today's telebriefing. For more information about NISVIS, including the executive summary and study details, please visit www.cdc.gov/violenceprevention/NISVIS, N-I-S-V-I-S, oh, I'm sorry, N-I-S-V-S. Also, to learn more about CDC's work on sexual violence, please visit our website at www.cdc.gov/violenceprevention, again, all one word, /sexual violence. And then for information on intimate partner violence prevention, you may visit our website at www.cdc.gov/intimate-partner-violence, all one word. And for all other information about CDC's work in saving lives and protecting people, please visit our website at www.cdc.gov/24-7. The transcript will be available later this afternoon. This concludes our media telebriefing, and thanks again for joining us.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.